Welcome everyone to the teleclass, Bacterial Resistance to Microbicides in the Healthcare Environment. My name is Paul Weber, and the co-founder of the teleclass education program is Dr. Syed Sattar. We'd like to thank you all for joining us for this teleclass. The man who is helping us keep on top of things, our faculty for this teleclass, is Dr. Jean-Yves Maillard. Dr. Maillard is a senior lecturer at Cardiff University in Wales. He is a highly respected teacher and author. He is the editor of Letters in Applied Microbiology, which is a part of the Journal of Applied Microbiology. He has received numerous awards for his work, and it is indeed a great honor to have him give our lecture on bacterial resistance to microbicides in the healthcare environment. Before he begins, let me also acknowledge that Virox Technologies, as sponsor of this teleclass, is providing funding that we are able to use to give free access for all of our teleclass education materials and much more to healthcare workers in developing countries. Thank you very much to Virox for their support of that program and the support of infection control education in general. Now, to present the teleclass, Bacterial Resistance to Microbicides in a Healthcare Environment, from the University of Cardiff, I am absolutely delighted to present Dr. Jean-Yves Maillard. Dr. Maillard.
Well, thank you very much, Paul, for this very kind introduction and to give me the opportunity to give a lecture on resistance, bacterial resistance. And I would extend my welcome as well to all the people joining us. Bacterial resistance is a very important topic at the moment, notably because of the number of products that contain microbicides. And microbicides are a term used by Syed Sattar in North America and Canada to define those agents, that antimicrobial agents that kill microorganisms and that are incorporated into a disinfectant, antiseptic, and a preservatives as well, or formulation. What I hope to do is to give you an overall view of mechanisms of resistance at the disposal of those microorganisms. Now, if you would like to move to the next slide, please. So the objectives of this lecture will be to review the mechanisms of bacterial resistance to microbicides, and I will also use the term biocides, but also to discuss the factors affecting the antimicrobial efficacy of those agents and probably their effect in helping microbial survival and emerging resistance. And finally, hopefully I will achieve to discuss the significance of emerging bacterial resistance, particularly in the healthcare environment, which is a subject close to my heart. Next slide, please. Now, when we talk about a resistance, we first of all, we need to define the word resistance. And if we look at the literature, then we have lots of different type of definitions. For example, we have resistance, tolerance, insusceptibility, on which one to use, which one define the best context. Well, according to Russell, resistance will be a microorganism surviving exposure to a biocide, to an antimicrobial agent, at a concentration that will kill the rest of the population. So you define like selecting for a resistant microorganism. And this definition is usually used in the lab for lab purposes. Chapman defined the term tolerance as an inhibition, but of microorganisms. That means the microorganism will not grow, but will survive the exposure to that antimicrobial, but they will not be killed. He defined further phenotypic tolerance as a transient condition, for example, found in microbial biofilm, and we'll talk about biofilm later on. Insusceptibility is an intrinsic property of a microorganism. It's an innate property. They are born with it. And for example, microorganisms that have intrinsic property will be spores or also mycobacteria, and we'll see that in a minute. However, for the purpose of this lecture, and I think what really concerns us now, is resistance in practice and how we're going to define resistance in practice. And I like to use the definition of bacterial survival following biocide challenge at an in-use concentration. And of course, this puts the emphasis on the in-use concentrations. That means the concentration of the biocide in a particular product. And this concentration might be very low. Next slide, please. So what are the biocide usage, especially in the healthcare environment? Hopefully you will be familiar with that. You've got disinfection, antisepsis, and preservation. Disinfection usually is a term reserved for surface disinfection, but also for a disinfection of endoscopes in automated washer disinfector. Then you've got different terms to define disinfection, like non-critical or semi-critical or critical surfaces, depending on the concentration or the level of disinfection you need. For example, for critical surfaces that are need to be protected from microorganisms, then we will use a high-level disinfection, and usually a very potent disinfectant at a high concentration. Antisepsis is the use of, I guess, a biocide on skin, and you've got a wide range of products, and the latest one are all those alcoholic gels or rubs. And then you've got preservations, which help to inhibit or kill microorganisms in the formulations, but the definition of a preservative is usually a biocide that is used at a very low concentration, for example, in cosmetic products. Now, what we've seen recently is increased usage of those agents in various products on surfaces. For example, what we have in inclusions of those microbicides in plastics, different type of clothing, bed sheets, curtains, different type of surfaces, hard surfaces, door handles, shower rails, trolleys, flooring, walls, and so on and so forth. However, in all those products, the concentration of those antimicrobial agents is very low. Now, the effect of those antimicrobial products on the microbial flora in practice has not been studied at the moment, and we've got no information on those effects. Next slide, please. Now, to talk about resistance, of course, we've got lots of evidence of microbial resistance to those biocides in practice, and those have been described for a very long time. Here on this slide, I give you some examples of some agents, for example, triclosan. And triclosan bath was used as an antiseptic for people with skin infections. Now, in some papers in 1981, Barry Cookson very well described a triclosan resistance in Staphylococcus aureus emerging from triclosan or the use of triclosan in bath. Likewise, we've got examples of triclosan resistance in anoash, but also to other products like chlorhexidines on quaternary ammonium compounds in different products. Now, those triclosan, chlorhexidine, and quaternary ammonium compounds are usually used for low-level disinfection or intermediate-level disinfections. However, emerging microorganisms to high-level disinfectant, to very active product, is not uncommon. For example, emergence of microbial resistance to glutaraldehyde. Of glutaraldehyde is used as a high-level disinfection for endoscope wash disinfector, and used at a concentration at 2%. And in the UK, some mycobacterium have been isolated, and those were resistant to 2% glutaraldehyde. Next slide, please. Now, those are examples. And at the moment, some very current examples, we are looking at also microbial resistance in endoscope wash disinfector, and we have managed to isolate a range of microorganisms resistant to in-use concentration of chlorine dioxide, 2.25%. And those microorganisms were, for example, Bacillus subtilis, Micrococcus luteus, Streptococcus sanguinis, and so on, Streptococcus mutans, Staphylococcus intermedius. And those were not contaminant from the operator. Those are microorganisms that were isolated from different parts of those endoscope washer disinfectors. So those are examples to show you that emerging resistance is a current problem in the healthcare environment. Next slide, please. Likewise, we've also started some surveillance program to look at the susceptibility of various microorganisms in the hospitals. And on this slide, we've looked at MRSA, Staphylococcus aureus, methicillin-sensitive Staph aureus, in intensive treatment units in the local hospitals on the susceptibility to a sodium dichloroazocyanuric acid, which is a chlorine-based agent used for cleaning floors or disinfecting floors. And we were quite surprised to see that at a short contact time, like 30-second contact time, with many microorganisms, many of those isolates, they are not completely killed by this usually considered high-level disinfectant. And those numbers are in red on your screen. Now, on this screen as well, you can see that most of the sensitive Staphylococcus aureus were slightly less susceptible to this chlorine-based agent than the MRSA on the right-hand side column. Again, those are further examples of microorganisms that are actually not that susceptible to what we thought would be a very good disinfectant. Next slide, please. So again, those are examples to show you that this subject is of very high interest. Why are those microorganisms so resistant? Well, it's why we've been interested in looking at the mechanisms of resistance of those microorganisms to various disinfectants. And on this slide, what you have is a very simple diagram of a cell structure where OW is the outer cell wall of the microorganism, PP, periplasmic space, CW, the cytoplasmic wall of those microorganisms, CM, the cytoplasmic membrane, and CP, the cytoplasms. Now, what this diagram shows you is basically the different type of mechanism you have for a bacteria to resist the effect of an antimicrobial agent. A, you've got reductions of uptake and penetration, that's this arrow, so that means the biocide cannot penetrate through the cells. B is reduction of accumulation of the biocide within the cells, and you can see an arrow coming from the inside of the cells to the outside of the cells. C, you've got inactivation of the biocide, so it's why you've got an arrow which is a dotted arrow, on where we're going to have a degradation of the biocide. So all in all, those mechanisms mean that the concentration of the biocides that penetrate within the cells and stay within the cells will be reduced. Now, this is very critical, as those biocides usually have multiple target sites within the cells, but those target sites are mainly situated within the cytoplasmic membrane on the cell cytoplasm. So if you reduce the concentration of the biocides that reach those target sites, then the microorganism is more likely to survive. So all in all those mechanisms contribute to a reduction in concentration of the effective concentration of the biocide. Now, this will have a profound effect on those products that contain a very low concentration of biocide to start with. Next slide, please. Now, with the next few slides, I'm going to review or give you examples of those different mechanisms that are really concern single cells. Now, to give you an example of impermeability barrier that will stop the biocides penetrate within the cells, here we have, for example, an intrinsic property of the microorganism, so the natural property of the microorganism, and this can be found in the spore, with the structure of the spore, especially the spore coat and cortex, will prevent many biocides to penetrate within the spore cores and destroy the spores. This intrinsic property is also a property of the mycobacteria, and especially within the cell wall of the mycobacteria, you've got a structure called mycoarabinogalactan, which is composed of mycolic acid. And this mycolic acid really prevents biocides like glutaraldehyde, but also quaternary aluminum compounds to penetrate through this outer structure of the mycobacteria. To some extent, the outer envelope in gram-negative is also responsible for an impermeability barrier. And this outer envelope is composed of a layer of lipopolysaccharide and a layer of phospholipid. Now, what is more worrying is this impermeability barrier can be also acquired by a microorganism. So that means that's a new property that is acquired by a microorganism that will give them a impermeability property. So, for example, change in lipopolysaccharide, so LPS membrane, or membrane fatty acid composition will prevent, for example, QACs, quaternary aminium compounds, on biguanide, like chloroxidine, to penetrate within the cells. Change in outer membrane protein, especially porins, will also have the same effect, and this has been well demonstrated with Pseudomonas aeruginosa. And in mycobacteria, a change in arabinogalactan composition has been shown to produce a resistance to glutaraldehyde. Next slide, please. Now, on this slide, you've seen additions of electron microscopic photo. This is represent a Pseudomonas teuteri. Pseudomonas teuteri, it's a microorganism that can be found in on skin and is usually susceptible to biguanides, to chloroxidine. On the top photo, you've got the normal Pseudomonas teuteri, which is susceptible to chloroxidine. And at the bottom of the photo, those very large cells, is a Pseudomonas teuteri that has been trained to become resistant to quaternary aminium compound and chloroxidine. And what you can see, it's a nice picture, is the enormous size of those cells. Now, further work, we've demonstrated that those cells, despite their size, or in addition to the size, they have changes in their LPS, their fatty acid compositions, and porin compositions. So that's just a nice picture to illustrate acquired resistance. Next slide, please. Now, in addition to a permeability barrier, what is very important is the surface interactions between the biocides and the cells. And usually the biocides will cause a change in hydrophobicity in the cell surface, and the change in hydrophobicity will reduce the uptake of certain biocides like QACs and chloroxidine. The surface charge of the microorganism is very important. Usually it's the microorganism surface is negatively charged. It's what cationic biocides like QACs are very active against bacteria. However, if we train the microorganisms so that the surface charge is decreasing, or if we grow the microorganisms that will induce a change in that surface charge, then the cationic biocide will be far less active. And this has been very well demonstrated in a very recent publication by Brinsma. Next slide, please. Now, the second mechanism involved is reduced accumulation of the biocide. And this is usually the property of efflux pump. Those efflux pumps are pumps that allow the microorganisms to expel all the substances that are harmful for the microorganisms. So they will expel the substance from the cytoplasm to outside of the cells. And so far, you have five major family of efflux pump identified in different microorganisms. So it's why this slide is quite complex. Now, I won't go into much details in those different types of efflux pump, but what is very important as well to understand is those efflux pumps, those different families of efflux pumps, are usually not that specific. So that means when they're activated, they can get rid of certain antimicrobial biocides as well as antibiotics. And there's been lots of debate in the literature whether using biocides will provide cross-resistance to antibiotics. And in the lab, this has been demonstrated in some occasion on efflux pump have been implicated. Now, one of the experts in efflux pumps have renamed certain efflux pump as the vomit pump, just to tell you a very appropriate name for those pumps. Next slide, please. Degradations of the biocide is also part of the arsenal of the microorganism to resist the effect of a biocide. This can be intrinsic or acquired properties. Degradations have been very well described in phenolic, like triclosan, but also metallic salt, like silver, and of course aldehydes, like formaldehyde. Next slide, please. Now, what is very important to notice is those microorganisms have all those mechanisms at their disposal. And on this slide is a result of some experiment looking at triclosan resistance in microorganisms in E. coli. And what you've got on the left-hand side, you've got the standard susceptible strain to triclosan, and it was resistance to 0.1 microgram per ml of a triclosan formulation. On TM1 to TM4 are resistant microorganisms to over 1,000 microgram per ml of a triclosan formulation. Now, what this slide shows is point out those mechanisms I explained to you just now. Now, when we combine triclosan with a compound called CCCP, and CCCP is an efflux pump blocker, then you can see the concentration of triclosan that will be active against those resistant microorganisms tremendously decreased to 25 micrograms per ml. Now, two columns down, where you've got TCS plus EDTA, EDTA is a membrane permeabilizer whereby it's going to displace or get rid of lipopolysaccharide on that outer membrane. So when we mix triclosan with EDTA, then again we're reducing the concentration, the insusceptibility of the resistant microorganism to triclosan to very low level. So those experiments, separate experiments, show that both efflux and permeability are responsible for resistance of those microorganisms to triclosan. Now further down, when we mixed triclosan with the efflux blocker on the permeabilizer, we were able to reduce even further the susceptibility of those microorganisms to triclosan. And this demonstrates that the microorganism using different mechanisms at the same time to be able to resist to very high concentration of an agent. Next slide, please. Now, those so far, what we've seen is single mechanisms of resistance for those microorganisms. Now, what concerns me and concerns other colleagues as well is the response of microorganisms to biocide exposure, and especially to low concentrations. And for example, what we've able to see is first adaptation of those microorganisms. Next slide, please. And adaptation can has been demonstrated usually in a laboratory experiment. There's been numerous examples of training microorganisms to become resistant to a wide range of biocides, like QACs, chlorhexidines, the biguanides, phenolics, glutaraldehyde, even chlorine-based disinfectant. And this has been demonstrated with a wide range of microorganisms, gram-negative, gram-positive, and mycobacteria. However, there has been very few examples of adaptation of microorganisms in practice. Also, adaptation or response to biocide exposure is modification of target site, and this has been only described with triclosan, whereby one of the targets of triclosan, it is an enol acyl carrier reductase, and in some microorganisms, then removing or modifying this target site provide some low-level resistance to that biocide. Most importantly, a biocide exposure will produce or elicit a stress response in those microorganisms, and they will induce some gene regulators like OxyR, SOX-RS, but also MAR-A genes. And those gene regulators will induce a cascade of response in those microorganisms. And that cascade response will be, for example, to activate efflux pumps, to reduce membrane porins, to change possibly fatty acids. So that stress response induced by biocides is extremely important. Next slide, please. Also, what we are interested in is the role of communication in a resistance mechanism. Next slide, please. We've been looking at, for example, what's called extracellular induction components, and they have been renamed alarmons. What those alarmons do is warn microorganisms that a detrimental conditions will occur. And this has been well demonstrated with acidification and heat response. So for example, if you treat with microorganism with heat and then extract the supernatant or filter those microorganisms, you'll get a supernatant. And if you treat microorganisms that have not been yet exposed to heat with the supernatant, those microorganisms will be far less susceptible to heat. Now, this principle was adapted to biocide exposure, and we were able to show in staphylococcus that pretreatment of those staphylococcus with chlorhexidine, the biguanide, will produce some low-level resistance, whereby we're going to have alarm hormones being produced and going to warn an exposed population of cells that you're going to have that biocide present. But again, we only produce a very low-level resistance. So again, those are laboratory experiments. Whether or not they occur in practice is difficult to know at present. Now, quorum sensing is communication between microorganisms, especially in the biofilm situations. And quorum sensing has been deemed to govern specific gene expression, especially stress response expression. So quorum sensing is very important. Next slide, please. Also, what we've looked at on what is known is extremely low concentration of biocides, like residual concentration on surfaces, might have an effect on the gene transfer between microorganisms, especially gene transfer, for example, of antibiotic resistance genes. And we've demonstrated that the use of cetrimide, for example, at extremely low concentration will increase the capacity of microorganisms to exchange genes between them, and increase, for example, here in red it said increase 1,000-fold. So that was highly significant. Again, those are laboratory experiments. On whether or not those occur in practice is difficult to ascertain. Next slide, please. Now, so far we've been looking at individual response of microorganisms, but what is interesting to look at now is the overall response of a cell population. Next slide, please. On when you expose cell populations to biocides, what first you're going to have selections, and this has been well demonstrated with a range of biocides. And in those graphs you have on the right-hand side, is on the top slide, is E. coli populations, and those are susceptible to triclosan. And what those different histograms show is the clonal population, so that means different clones within the populations. Now in blue are the population which has not been exposed to the biocide triclosan, and you can see you've got a wide variety of clones. And in red are the populations that have been exposed to triclosan, and you can see immediately a reduction in the clonal populations. Now, what is more alarming for us is when you compare those red histograms to the cells treated with triclosan, and those are mutants, resistant mutants to triclosan, and as you can see, those mutants, whether they are exposed or not to triclosan, the clonal population remain identical. But moreover, they're exactly the same population or clonal population as the susceptible strain treated with triclosan. So this is, again, an example of selection of a population or certain cells within that population following biocide exposure. Next slide, please. Now, when we talk now of microorganism in practice that you find in the healthcare environment, very often those microorganisms are not present in liquid or in suspension, but they are present as a community of microorganisms that grew on surfaces. And those communities are called biofilms. And biofilms are a very important notions, because biofilm microorganisms, or microorganisms that are growing as a biofilm, are usually far more resistant to biocide exposure than microorganisms that are not grown as biofilm. Next slide, please. In order to explain that increase in resistance in those microorganisms, we've got several mechanisms of resistance specific to biofilms. First, what we have is a concentration gradient, whereby the biocide will have to diffuse within that community of microorganisms to kill all the microorganisms. And as they diffuse within that community of microorganisms, they will interact with cell constituent, with the matrix that is produced by the cells to bind all the cells together. But also, the biocide is likely to kill microorganisms, releasing even more, organic matter that will quench the activity of those biocides. What we have also within those biofilms is an enhanced bacterial insusceptibility, whereby degradation, efflux, early stress response will be multiplied, will be far more important than in single cells. Also very important within those very complex community, what we have is we have a slow growth or a slow metabolism of those microorganisms, especially those microorganisms that are close to the surface, where the nutrients and oxygen concentration will be reduced. And because those microorganisms have a slow growth of metabolism, they will be generally less susceptible to biocide effect. Next slide, please. Now, within those biofilm communities, also what has been found for the last few years is you've got a pocket of surviving microorganisms, and those have been renamed dormant cells. And for some reason, those cells are highly resistant to biocides, and they are not found only at the base of the biofilm, but they are found all around the biofilm. And the reason why those cells are resistance to biocide exposure is not well known at present, but what we know is they have no metabolism at all. Now, within the biofilm, you've got lots of communication between cells, and you've got lots of exchange of genetic material. And within those genetic material, you've got also exchange of genes responsible, for example, efflux mechanisms, but also impermeability. Now, intrinsic resistance refers to the type of biofilm community. For example, if you've got a biofilm community made of macrobacteria, which are intrinsically resistant to certain biocide because of the cell structure, then a mycobacterial biofilm will be, by definition, far more resistant than a biofilm made of, for example, a gram-positive bacteria community. Next slide, please. So overall, so far, what we've seen is a huge, complex resistance mechanisms available to single cells as barrier to penetration, decrease accumulation, but also at the population level, whereby you've got selections of certain clones within that population, adaptation, communications, and you've got also a resistance as a community of microorganisms. So all those resistance mechanisms will prevail to the biocide activity. Next slide, please. So is it time to redefine resistance on the definition of resistance? So far in textbook will talk about intrinsic and acquired resistance. Are there those best definitions? Well, if we talk about resistance in practice and what you're going to see out there, then certainly biofilm resistance will be extremely important to consider, but also environmental resistance. And environmental resistance define the growth of the microorganism, especially the growth conditions, whereby where you've got nutrient limitation, you're going to have low metabolism and increased susceptibility of those cells that are grow in environmental conditions. For example, it is very well known that when you have nutrient limitation, then cell uptake will be impaired, and especially cell uptake of biocide. And again, that's been very well described in this paper by Brill, which I give you the reference here. Also, growth conditions will affect the cell envelope plasticity, and that means the cell envelope composition. So if you grow, for example, the microorganism in a lipid-rich medium, then they will change their lipid composition on their cell wall, and this will affect the efficacy of certain biocides, especially the penetration of biocides. So environmental resistance really defines the way those microorganisms are grown within within the environment. And this is quite a huge difference between the way microorganisms are grown in the lab. Next slide, please. So is resistance a genuine concern? Well, when we have product at a very high concentration of biocides, then emerging microbial resistance is very unlikely. But it is not impossible. And I've shown you early on that you can isolate microorganisms, for example, for endoscope washer disinfector, where the concentrations are very high. Those microorganisms can be resistant to induce high concentration of those high-level disinfection, like glutaraldehyde and chlorine dioxide. Likewise, it is not uncommon to have a quaternary ammonium a compound formulations that are heavily contaminated with some type of microorganism, and in particular Pseudomonas aeruginosa. So at high concentration, it is unlikely but not impossible. However, the concern is those products containing a low concentration of biocides. Are emerging microbial resistance possible? The answer is yes. It has been well demonstrated in the lab. Interaction with the microbial cells, what is the effect of those low concentrations? This is a very gray area. This has not been well studied. Are those low concentrations eliciting a stress response mechanism? Again, the answer is yes. This has been very well demonstrated in the lab. Are those low concentrations selecting for surviving clones? Again, the answer is yes. This has been well demonstrated in the lab. But again, all those answers are from studies that have been looked in the lab, but not looked in practice in the environment. Next slide, please. Evidence of microbial resistance in practice. As I mentioned, yes, you have plenty of examples, but you have to bear in mind that usually we isolate microorganisms because you've got inappropriate usage of those biocides. And here I give you some examples, like use of weak solutions, of topping up of containers, and for example, chloroxidine use at concentration of 1 in 5,000, so at a very low concentration, and of course you had microbial growth in those very weak solutions. Also, the presence and the way those biocides are used on the containers is very important. For example, inactivation of QSAs by the presence of cotton, but also organic loads or different plastics. And again, the microorganism growing in those in use concentrations of formulations have been found because the containers were not appropriate. Inactivation by organic matter is very important as well. And this is particularly important for a veterinary practice on the environment, whereby very often what we see, especially in the UK, is people going to use biocides like QSAs, biguanide, that are less active in the presence of organic load. And they are going to use those biocides for for veterinary or environmental decontamination. And of course, those biocides will be inactivated by organic load, and therefore the concentration will be reduced, and you're going to have microbial survival. Neutralization of biocides within certain products is also an important issue, whereby some manufacturers are ill-advised, whereby they mixed, for example, cationic biocide with an ionic emulsifier, and this will result in the neutralization of the active compounds, and therefore the inactivation of the biocide, and will be conducive to microbial growth. So again, evidence of microbial resistance in practice is there, and often linked to inappropriate usage. However, what we have here is, overall, you've got not that many informations of microbial resistance from the environment, from the healthcare institutions, because reports are very rare. So it is likely that all the incidents are not well reported. Now, at the beginning of this lecture, I mentioned all those products that contain a very low concentration of biocide, those antimicrobial surfaces. At the moment, we really don't know what the effect of those antimicrobial surfaces have in practice, because it's too early to say, and because they are not being studied, or there are very, very few studies out there that are being conducted at present. But this is something that we certainly will need to watch in the future. Next slide, please. What are the evidence of resistance in vitro? I told you of many examples of looking or emerging resistance or producing microorganisms with resistant phenotype. But also what we have to bear in mind, that although it is very well documented that we can produce microorganisms that are resistant to a wide range of biocides in vitro, so in the lab, mainly through selections, then usually it is overall quite difficult to produce those type of resistant microorganisms. Or now I'm talking about resistance to very high concentration of biocides. And the best technique to produce those a resistant mutant to high concentration of biocide is called the stepwise training, whereby you increase the concentration of biocide step by step, and you are going to end up with microorganisms that are resistant to high concentration of biocides. Now, we do that in the lab just to be able to look at those mechanisms of resistance available to those microorganisms. So this is the best technique to use, and of course it does not represent what is happening in practice, whereby you're not going to increase slowly the concentration of biocide in your product used in the healthcare environment. Usually, microorganisms are exposed to quite a high concentration of biocides in one go. So again, what you have to remember is overall, it's quite difficult to produce resistant mutants in vitro. Not impossible, but difficult. Next slide, please. What about the problem of cross-resistance? Cross-resistance is producing a microorganism that is resistant to multiple biocides, but also to antibiotics. And co-resistance refers to the transfer of resistant genes that will give you resistance not only to one biocide, but to several biocides, or to biocide and antibiotics together. So again, cross and co-resistance have been demonstrated in vitro, in the lab only, so we know it is possible, but it has not been demonstrated in practice. Again, because this has not been reported and not documented. I cannot say that it is not happening or it will not happen in practice, but there is no evidence so far. Likewise, there has been no evidence in practice that those microbicides we select for antibiotic resistance. And again, the way we've done that is collecting a large number of clinical isolates in, for example, in different hospitals, and suggest them to a biocide and look for the antibiotic susceptibility profile. And again, there's been no evidence supporting that biocide we select for antibiotic resistance in those microorganisms. But again, those studies have looked at high concentration of biocide, not low concentration of biocides. So it's why I added on that slide that this does not account for the increased usage of low concentration of biocides. Again, we don't know what is happening. So really, almost to conclude this lecture, I advocated recently the use of surveillance programs, not to antibiotic resistance because those are in place, but to a change in biocide susceptibility. And I told you early on in this lecture that we've starting to look in the hospital at the disinfection practice in certain units in the hospital, especially in the intensive care unit of the hospital, looking at the microbial flora, and especially Staph aureus, because it's a real concern in the UK, on their susceptibility to the biocide used in those units. And as I told you, early or preliminary reports that we were able to file have shown some not disturbing, but very interesting findings, whereby with those Staph aureus, they are less susceptible to the agent that we were first reporting or that was reporting in the literature. So again, those programs are only starting. I believe they are quite important and will give us at least a very useful information in the change in the microbial flora in the hospital in practice following biocide exposure. And I know those programs also will be starting in the U.S. very shortly. Next slide, please. This is my concluding slide. This is a quote from Sal Goldwyn, where really define resistance in microorganism in practice. And it says, making predictions is difficult, particularly about the future. With that, I really thank you for having listened to me for 45 minutes on this lecture. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the information that you presented. It's fascinating look at how the microbes, of course, they've been around a lot longer than we have, so they've learned many more tricks to evolving and staying alive, haven't they? It's unlikely that we're going to stop them anytime soon. Found it interesting also your reference two or three times to the in-use or the weak dilutions of biocides. One of my friends took over a job at a healthcare facility in the UK, and she noted that the bottles that they were using, the spray bottles into which they diluted, I presume, a quaternary ammonium compound, the bottles were actually green and black on the inside, of course, from microbial growth, but they continued to use them. Do you have any suggestions on how we can prevent something like that? Because the concentrates are always diluted into a use dilution in a smaller container. Is it just a matter of disposing and getting new ones on a fairly regular basis?
Absolutely. I mean, that's two things. I mean, if you dilute your product too much, then it will be prone to microbial contaminations. And when you've got microbial contaminations, what you're going to have is a biofilm establishment on those bottles. It's where you've got those green slime. And then you're going to have very high level of microorganism growing in those products. Is the green, I mean, usually green microorganism, I mean, probably pseudomonas contaminations. And those will be difficult to get rid of. So the best thing is to use new bottles and to make sure that your product is not diluted too much. The other concern as well is depending what they're using that disinfectant for. And maybe a change of disinfectant of product would be appropriate and to use something which is more antimicrobial.
Do you expect new generations of biocides to emerge that are less susceptible to resistance, oxidizers and things like that?
Well, in Europe now, we've got the what's called the Biocidal Product Directive, which will limit the formulation of completely new active because it would be too expensive to produce. What we're going to see, however, is clever formulations whereby a combination of different active. When you mentioned oxidizing agent, they're certainly probably very good biocides. So we're going to have emergence of new formulations combining different biocides with increased efficacy. But also we'll see probably the different formulation that will concentrate on the delivery of those agents, not combining active ingredients anymore, but where they're being delivered. And for example, is through microspheres, where you can concentrate the biocides in microspheres and they might persist longer on the surfaces, but probably also a using other technology that will allow to concentrate an active ingredient in, for example, again, different oil formulations. And by doing that, you will deliver a very high dose of biocides to the microorganisms. So those will be quite clever formulation, and I think we'll see them developing within the next 5-6 years.
That'll be very exciting to see. I'm looking forward to that. Thanks very much to Dr. Maillard for a tremendously interesting presentation. And thanks as well to Virox Technologies for their sponsorship and support of teleclass education. And, of course, thank you to all of you for joining us today. Until we meet again, goodbye.